ready for two guys who can handle the truth.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
But we can. Dave Palumbo, John Romano. RxMuscle.com presents Heavy Muscle Radio. Watch out, this hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRIndustries.com.
Welcome to another episode of Heavy Muscle Radio. My name's Dave Palumbo, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and compatriot in crime, John Romano, down in Florida tonight. And you will be up in New York in two short weeks, correct?
Yeah, man, I'm heading up. So probably the end of this week, we'll start driving up.
Yeah, I know. Me. It's like this countdown that we've been doing for like the past 3 months now reminds me of those those wedding things that people buy where it's like a clock that counts down backwards to the day of the wedding.
Right.
Someone bought me that when I was married the first time. I stopped it like a week before. The girl I was with at the time, she's like, how can this thing stop working? So that's not a good sign, I said. I should have taken my own advice.
Oh, man. Well, Jimmy Pelletier will be happy to know that we'll be going live soon.
Yeah, we're going live, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, I was down in Dallas, Texas this past weekend for the 2009 Europa Super Show run by Ed and Betty Pariso and, of course, Eric Hillman, the owner of Europa Distribution Supplements. And I got to say, the show, John, was the best one I've ever been to, believe it or not. And I think the reason was, number one, there was a much, much bigger crowd. But number two, they created a little bit more of an intimate environment, and I know you've been to them in the past. Usually they're spread out everywhere. Right. I thought that they really kind of narrowed it down enough so that the booths and everything were kind of lined up and you didn't have to walk like 6 miles to get, you know, everywhere in that convention center.
Now, what about the cars? What about all the muscle cars?
They had some really cool cars. They had a Lambo Gallardo convertible. They had an old Boss Mustang, you know, the old ones, not the new ones.
Yeah. Right.
They had some new Camaros there. They had some real classic cars. Actually, some of the real old cars, you know, all restored. I wish I had more time to actually look at them. I think that the cars that they brought into this particular expo was actually better than any of the years in previous that I remembered, at least.
Wow. Yeah, I would like to have seen that. And there was an awful lot of RX Muscle people milling around that show.
Well, you know, not only the RX Muscle people, you know, the usual, we have, Sean and myself and Nick the Stick doing some pictures. And Chris Zimmerman was there and Dan Ray, of course. But we also had a lot of board members were there. Miss Guns was there. Aaron Singerman was there with his girlfriend, Amy.
It was great. Thank you.
And there were a lot of what's the guy who was taking all the pictures? Papa, what's his
Rossi.
Name?
What? Oh, no, sorry, yeah.
Muscle Papa John.
Papa John, yeah, Muscle Papa John. So he was taking pictures. So we got Sean Andros in the studio with us too. So say hello.
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 And
hi, guys.
And now let me hear all of the hot single women you were macking over the weekend.
Oh my God. We'll get to that. I guess I should probably start from I got to say, John, you know how I've been complaining the last couple of weeks about the plane flights?
Yeah.
We actually had American Airlines is what I want to travel all the time. They have very good air ducts above us. Sean, when he got off the plane, was partially frozen, I think. It took about 3 hours for the thaw out. I, on the other hand, was very comfortable and slept both ways on the plane. But I did have a question. You know, it's funny. When I got on the airplane to go out to Dallas, as I was walking, you know, in the door and looking for my seat, I looked into the cockpit area. And the only people who have less room than us, the passengers, are the pilots. I don't even know how they fit into that seat. It's like they're like almost like they have to like slip their legs under the nose of the plane to get into those seats. I mean, if you talk about the danger seat, if that plane's going down, there's no way the pilots are going to make it. But the interesting thing is, I was thinking to myself, is how the fuck does Joel Stubbs fit into that cockpit? It's impossible. And then I came up with a hypothesis. You know, Joel did very well this past weekend. He went from like whatever 12th last week to third this week, qualifying for the Olympia. And the rap against him really is that he's got no legs. And
right.
I think what happens is from sitting in that cockpit for so long, he's getting muscle atrophy because there's no way if he had a huge, huge leg, that it would fit into the cockpit. So maybe he's purposely keeping his legs thinner so that he doesn't lose his job as a pilot.
I think both torn quads is a better excuse. But,
maybe he tore his quads in the cockpit. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, who knows? Maybe he did. But, you know, it's funny you said that about American, because I just flew back and forth to L.A. over the last few days. And, man, that plane was so freaking cold. I'm pretty much like you. I like it cool. I like a nice, cool, you know, environment. Right. This was freezing. I was sitting there with the blanket wrapped around me like an old lady with a shawl. Because it was blowing on my arm. I was getting like, you know, my skin was turning gray on my forearm. It was like unbelievably freezing. And then I got up to use the restroom. I walked in the back and it was 30 degrees warmer in the next, you know, section over. I called the flight attendant. I go, can't you guys like regulate this? You know? And she goes, well, we'll try. We'll raise it a couple more degrees on the thermostat. Made absolutely no difference whatsoever. It's like there's one place where the cold air comes out of the plane, and it happened to have been right over my head.
Oh, you took American too?
Yeah. Other than that, it was great. Yeah, I mean, they had, you know, the business class they had in that plane was amazing. It was the, you know, I don't know what number plane it is. It's got the two aisles, you know, and it's,
yeah,
got
that's
like,
what we had. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big plane.
Oh, you had the 757 then.
Is that what? Yeah, 757, and it had a business class, you know, between first class and economy. It looked really, they had a comfortable, man. They had big chairs with that folded all the way back into like a bed, and they had these big TV screens.
Chris Bell flew you business class?
No, he didn't fly me business class. But I'm just saying there was business class, but I'm saying, you know, it's something to shoot for down the road because boy, those guys were cozy in there, man.
Chris Bell, what am I talking about? I mean, American, I like the air ventilation in the plane. I got to tell you, I like JetBlue because there's a lot of room, but I don't know why they can't. Look, I understand people get cold on the plane sometimes. They get warm in the plane. The air jets should have unlimited pressure there. If you want to get that thing blowing on your heart, it should blow on your heart. I don't know why there's a limitation on JetBlue's air ducts, but it's almost a deal breaker for me, I got to tell you.
Because you're the only human being alive with a mean body temperature of 105.
Well, that's why I got to take American from now on. I'm going to get a frequent flyer. I'm going to get my American card, whatever those cards are for frequent flyer miles, and I'm just going to book everything on American from now on. That's all.
Sean's
going to
have
to wear a sweatshirt. That's all on the plane.
God forbid I fly JetBlue if my knees don't look like grapefruit when I get off.
Right. The only problem with American is that they haven't hired a new flight attendant in like 10 years.
I like, you know what? I like the old ladies better. I'm going to tell you. I like the old ladies better. Because you know what? On the other planes, and this is no rap against because I'm making very broad generalizations, I don't like these young like gay guys. They're really, a lot of them are a little snooty and obnoxious.
No, those guys are the worst.
Jeff does well with those guys because they all like him. But right. I personally don't like him. And I don't like the... I don't really like these young ditzy women either because they just got attitudes. I like the older women. They're very very. They, for some reason, they love me. They like to mother me. They get me whatever I want, and I'm happy with that. I don't want a pretty flight attendant. When I'm on the plane in the morning, I have no sleep. I look terrible. I want to, if I snore and drool, I don't want to have to like worry that some hot chick's going to be like, ooh, look at that guy, you know.
John, the real reason why Dave is saying this is because you don't understand that Dave puts his leg out, which will touch the person to his left. Okay, so, you know, the younger ones will come down and slap his leg. I don't think the old ladies are like, you know.
No, they're courteous.
Right.
Excuse me, can you please move your leg?
Or like the young ones are like, excuse me, sir, put your leg back.
The gay guys are worse. They'll run your leg over. They don't even stop.
The gay guys like to caress you. Stop it.
No, they don't. They'll run your leg over. They get bitchy.
The gay guys are the worst. As soon as it gets a little bit tense, they get all flustered and bitchy.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah, no, I don't
and
either.
I had two of them on my flight home, and they were like, they were in a tizzy. They were going, they were like, you know, just, and I don't think they liked each other. I think they purposely paired them up on one cart together, and like one was pushing, and the other one was pulling, and they wasn't pushing when they were pulling, and they got into an argument every time they moved the cart. It was hysterical. And of course, that argument transcended the cart to the people, you know, who they were serving, and they were just bitchy, 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 bitchy. I mean, if you want to be gay, but don't be gay and bitchy. That's the two big combinations I don't like.
You know, it's funny because I don't think I've ever seen a male flight attendant that wasn't gay. I think it's almost like required. Like if you're not gay, you got to pretend you're gay almost to get the job.
What,
I think.
What straight guy would want to be a flight attendant? Come on.
I knew a guy. There was a guy. I took a yoga class a few years back, and there was a guy in the class. He was this. I mean, he was married. He was a nice guy. He worked for JetBlue. And you know what? When I used to take JetBlue a couple of years ago, he must have quit or something like that. And probably they found out that he wasn't gay. But he used to always up to give me good seats, and then he'd move me and stuff like that. And then he disappeared. So I guess, you know, they probably said, oh, this guy is not playing for our team. Get rid of him.
I would say that the majority of men working for the airlines, both on the plane and off the plane, ticket agents included, are gay.
Yeah, pilots too?
No, the pilots
are straight. Those guys are straight. Yeah. Now they get to bang all the flight attendants.
Yeah, you're not allowed to be. I don't think you can be gay and be a pilot.
Wait a minute. What if you have, you know, like the male pilots, and then you have the gay flight attendants? Does that mean that they're gay?
No, the pilots are never
stocked with all male gay flight attendants. It's always one or two, and you know, to keep things interesting, they got bunch of old. An American's got a bunch of old ladies and not old ladies. I shouldn't say that. Bunch of older women and you know, one or two token gay men just to keep things interesting.
Listen, if I'm a pilot, I just want someone who's going to bring me my fucking food and drink when I need it. I don't care if they're hot, if they're not. These guys don't care. They're locked in the cockpit. They don't even get to even fraternize with anyone. So, you know,
until they land.
Until, yeah. Well, then they get off the plane and then they go do their thing. So the pilots are like in another world of their own, really. They're not even part of the airline experience as far as I'm concerned.
Now, you know, it's the people that you deal with. I mean, it's nothing sexual. Or, you know, attracting that I'm talking about. But it's nice to deal with pretty people. I mean, if you're on a long flight and you're being served by somebody, I want somebody who's pleasant, you know, not obese, not going through menopause, and not gay. I mean, is that too much to ask?
That's a lot to ask. Because who else? Those people are usually much more well-adjusted, and they would never work as flight attendants.
Probably, right, exactly.
Now, when I got there the first day and we drove over to the expo, the Dallas Convention Center, John, we attract all the lunatics. And I just happened to glance over at the parking lot and I see this guy, and I know you've seen the video, with a plastic bag over his head and over his body, and he's jump roping in the parking lot.
Was he trying to make weight for the amateur show?
I didn't know what he was doing. I just started laughing, and then Nick said to me, you know, you want to go interview that guy. And I said, holy shit, that's a good idea. So we pulled into the parking lot, and we got out, and I interviewed him. It's obviously up on the site. I called it the plastic bag guy and interview. And he was doing a jiu-jitsu tournament. He'd only been training for 3 weeks. I'm sure he got his ass kicked, but I thought it was pretty funny. That was the start of the weekend. So I knew that there was going to be a lot of humor throughout the weekend, and I was pretty much... That is pretty much right.
But wait. Was this guy wrapped in plastic doing jump and rope as a training method, or was he just a lunatic?
No, he was trying to make weight for like the jiu-jitsu tournament or something like that. You know,
because it was like 400 degrees out, yeah, wasn't it?
At least. That's why I had to stop and get this guy. I mean, they had him doing it for like a half hour there, maybe more. You know,
he had to get him before he died.
And you know, I knew he wasn't a bodybuilder because you could see the guy had not a single fucking ounce of muscle on his body. Wow. He must have been like the sacrificial lamb for some guy who crucified him in the.
The jobber.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Jobber, yeah. So, anyway, I took Sean Andros to Whataburger. I know about that. You know, that's kind of like the McDonald's version. And, you know, I was very upset, John, I got to tell you, because and I did a video there, which I will put up later in the week, which I think people will enjoy. But I'm very upset because, you know what, in Texas, everything is big, right?
Right.
They have a triple cheeseburger there or something like that, and that's my favorite sandwich there. But they did away with the supersize, just like they did in McDonald's. I mean, a supersize in Whataburger used to be like two fries that you'd get in McDonald's, and with this huge drink. Wow. And they did away with it. I said, you guys in Texas succumbed to the pressure of the supersize. Give me a break. This restaurant like basically yells out loud, I am unhealthy. Eat me, you know. And I mean, what's the fuck's the difference if they got a supersize or not? Sean didn't like it though. He didn't think
Whataburger is fucking horrendous.
He didn't like it. He's out of his freaking mind. I think.
Why, Sean? What's the matter with Whataburger?
It is nowhere near. I mean, the quality control they have at McDonald's is superior to any other fast food chain. This thing we had, what was the guy's name behind the counter there?
Caesar.
Complete train wreck.
Caesar was a good guy. He was a little overweight, Johnny. He was about 370 pounds.
give or take 50 or 60. Yeah. And you get these three sloppy-ass brown discs on a wet piece of bread. And, you know, Dave sucked down like eight of them and was happy as could be.
I even took one to go for later at night, and you know what? Nick the Stick was very happy that I did. Needless to say, Nick was not on a diet this past week. He was on the Dave Palumbo diet this past week.
Nick the Stick, who is now going to put on the freshman 15, working for RX Muscle.
Yeah, all he did was feed that kid all weekend. You know?
He's a young kid. He's a young kid. He's going to eat like a maniac.
Yeah, but he's a former fatty. You remember?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Now, McDonald's, you know, to Dave's credit, McDonald's is, and to support what Sean just said, McDonald's has its own everything. It's got its own trucking line. It's got its own farms. They grow their own beef. They grow their own, you know, the produce. They make their own bread. They make all their own ingredients and products all come from McDonald's factories. So They do have an incredible quality control. And I noticed it in Mexico. It was really weird because we went on a road trip from Puerto Vallarta to this town outside of Mexico City, and we went through all of these back towns and roads, and it was an amazing trip. And we stopped at like five different McDonald's along the way because there were basically nothing else at that hour we were traveling. Right. And everything was exactly the same. The burger at location one tasted exactly like the burger I got here.
They get it from the same place, that's why.
It's all the same. Right. From the burgers here, the burgers there, everywhere, they're exactly identical. McDonald's tastes the same in any country, anywhere in the world, at any time.
Well, that's why Skinny Rich eats there. You know, Colette's friend Skinny Rich, who's a germaphobe. Yep. He said that there's you know, the quality control is up to his standards, and he believes that it to be germ free. So,
and they make it with love, guys.
They make it with
special
love.
Care goes into every Angus burger.
I am very up on Whataburger. I'm very high up there. That's up on my list with Check. You ever eat Checkers, John?
I have eaten Checkers. Okay. Checkers is pretty good.
Yeah, Checkers is good. But Whataburger is just, you know, when you go to Texas, you got to eat. Well, I did eat a few McDonald's meals, I must admit, because it was close to the hotel. But Whataburger really was a treat for me, at least on Friday night, I got to say.
What do you like, Jeff? What's your favorite?
I'll take the McDonald's.
Well, he's never had Whataburger, so you can't really ask him that question.
Yeah.
What about Steak and Shake?
I've never been there.
Neither have I.
No?
Is it like in Florida or something?
No, they have them all over.
Not in New York.
No, there's no steak. Mm-hmm. Oh, what about White Castle?
No way.
White Castle is hideous.
I kind of like White Castle.
Death.
Really?
The thing about White Castle is that you have to divorce, even though they look like little hamburgers, they're not really hamburgers.
No, there's no meat.
It's a skinny slice of perforated gristle with lots of onions and flavoring that tastes really amazing, and they're small, and you can eat like nine of them. So, you know,
and you fart your brains out all night.
Oh God! You're impacted when you eat that. When you eat it over there,
you better take a serving of Fiberlize.
You gotta have like a serving of Fiberlize in between each burger when you eat that White Castle.
Hey John, did you ever go into 7-Eleven and actually microwave one of those little White Castle burgers they got there?
That's even more dangerous. That's a secondhand White Castle burger.
No, what I love about 7-Eleven is that they have devised an entire food line that is engineered to be served in a cylinder so that it can be cooked on that hot dog rotating grill thing that they have. They have like 90 different food items that are round and that you can cylindrical, that you can eat, that they can heat up on that.
Anyone who eats that hot dog that's been rotating on that for 500 years is out of their fucking minds. That's all I know.
No, but they got taquitos and they got chicken wings. They got everything that's in a cylinder shape. And this is all made on that. They have a rack. You know, you go into 7-Eleven, there's a rack of those things.
I don't know. I don't think that stuff's safe to eat. But I will tell you one thing. I was in Whataburger. This disturbed me a little bit, I must admit. I got some of it on film as much as I could because the guy, the little bugger, was pretty fast. But there was a cockroach running in, around in there. And this was a fucking big cockroach, John. Now, before you get all in a tiffy, the people from Texas informed me that it was not a cockroach. It was, in fact, a cricket. Now, I don't know about you. I took a little entomology in when I was in college, but I can't tell the difference between a cricket and a cockroach. As far as I'm concerned, in New York, we call crickets cockroaches. Aren't they the same thing?
No.
Oh.
but they have something here in Florida called the palmetto bug that looks like...
This was no palmetto bug. This was as close to a cockroach as I've ever seen.
But the crickets have like those legs that look like frog's legs that they jump with.
Right, but what's the difference between a cockroach and a cricket?
Cockroach looks like crickets are good. Cockroaches are like, they don't make noise. Cockroaches don't make noise and stuff. They just multiply.
Right,
they're all over the place.
Right, so what I would think is the cockroach is better because they don't make that clicking noise.
Well, I don't know what grosses me out so much about cockroaches, but they got them here. The palmetto bugs look exactly like cockroaches, only 90 times bigger. And not in my house, but in my condo down the street, there was a problem with them because there was an old guy living, two floors down and on the other wing of the building who was a total slob. He was just an absolute mess. And he had this place was infested with these palmetto bugs, and they would, spread from his unit to the other ones. And every now and then, you wake up at night and go take a piss or something, and you see this little animal running across the floor, and it was like half a shoebox. It was giant.
Yeah.
You know, when you step on it, it makes this disgusting crackling sound, and the goop comes out, and it's awful. But... I couldn't. You can't catch a cricket. Those things are impossible to step on.
I didn't try to kill him. I was just trying to get him on camera. So I'll have to blow up the video of it. And we'll have to do a further analysis. Maybe someone on our boards is an expert in insects, and we'll have
an entomology question. Of the week, and we'll try to identify the bug.
God knows the various PhDs on our board will take care of this immediately.
That's true.
Right.
Now, I have one more pet peeve I want to just throw out there before we get to the Tampa Bay Pro. It's Tampa Bay Pro. I don't even know what week it is anymore. The Europa Pro
Europa.
Breakdown. It's funny, but I lost my card reader. So I went and bought a card reader at Radio Shack, which I have to give a very poor review to. I plugged it in. Put my first card into it, and the thing started burning. I started smelling like the plastic melting. So the Radio Shack card reader that I spent $21 on lasted less than 3 minutes.
21 seconds.
And I didn't even get any pictures downloaded. So everyone's like, go get it from Best Buy. So I go on the Best Buy website, and I'm like, all right, what do I want? I don't want one of those card readers where you only put one card in. So I figured, let me get a 6 or 7-in-1 card reader, right? I figured that this way it'll take any disc. Well,
right.
I got my card reader in the mail today. It doesn't do compact flash discs, which is exactly what Dan Ray shoots on, which is what most photographers shoot on. So evidently now they're up to like this. What would you say, Jeff? There's like a 50-in-1 or something like that?
The 25-in-1. That'll read anything.
Can you fucking believe it with these fucking card readers?
Can't they standardize these fucking things? I mean, what's the matter with them? It's like phone chargers. Remember we were in Tampa and I needed a phone charger? Yeah. I go to the hotel desk. I go, you guys by any chance have a phone charger? People leave them in the room.
Right.
He goes, oh, yeah. He gives me a freaking wine box. full of chargers. Not one of them is the same. I got, I'm sitting there trying to stick these things into my phone. There must have been 700 of them all different. Why can't we have some standardization here in this world?
This happened right after we were at a Waffle House under a bridge somewhere in South Florida.
Right, it was.
That was a popular video.
At least I had enough power in my phone to navigate us there. That was important.
That was that was certainly a very popular video, the Waffle House video, John.
Yeah, it was. So they're up to 25 now on the card reader?
I guess. I don't know. I have to go fucking return this card reader and find one that reads the card I want. I mean, you'd think they would have the most popular cards in there. I don't know. These things just annoy me. Like you said, why can't we have one phone charger that charges every fucking phone?
Exactly. What do they have to have all this difference for? There's one really cool feature my phone has. That it'll beam the photo to my computer Bluetooth, but via Bluetooth with no wire, and it's extremely fast. It does it in about 1 second.
Right, and what's the purpose of that?
That you get the picture from the phone, from the camera to the computer.
Yeah, but those phone pictures suck anyway.
I'm saying, if they can do it with a phone, why can't they do it with a camera?
They probably can. They probably can.
So who knows? With those stupid freaking cards and card readers. Just beam the thing over.
I don't know. Yeah, the technology's, you got to put it on a card because it could get lost in hyperspace. You know, that's you don't want to have that look.
Hyperspace, it's 3 inches. It's from the phone to the computer. How can I get lost?
I don't know. Things get lost all the time in our world. Now, I have one letter of the week I wanted to read too, and I thought maybe you would have a good response to this. I'm just going to paraphrase because I'm not going to read the whole letter. Basically, the person wants to know how they could lower their sex drive while they're on a cycle, John, because the guy's wife can't keep up with him, and he's got 3 kids, and he's got a busy schedule, and all he thinks about is having sex. And I told him to get a girlfriend, but I thought maybe you would have a better solution to the problem.
I was going to say he wants to lower his sex drive. I would just say get married, but
he's
already married.
He's already married.
He wants to lower his sex drive.
Is there anything you take? He told me.
He can always start a divorce and custody proceedings. that'll pretty much kill it.
Yeah, I don't think that's something he wants to do though.
Yeah, man. I think it's terrible to recommend that somebody get a girlfriend, but. You know, I think in a marriage, in that kind of situation, when a guy's got, when the guy's got needs like that, I mean, and the wife is not willing to, help out in that regard to the degree that he needs it.
Right.
I mean, come on, he either has to, go on a cityguide.com and get himself a new hooker every night, or he's got to do it the other way. But I mean, it's not fair that, if he's a guy chasing his dreams and he gets jacked up and his sex drive goes up and he's sitting there with his dick in his hand, that's no good.
Yeah.
You got to do something about that. So either the girlfriend or a hooker, my first choice would be sit down with the wife and go, look, this is temporary. I'm going to be off of this shit, and then I'm going to have no sex drive. So, just bear with me here. Put out, morning, let me come home at lunch, and, at night before we go to bed, give me at least 3 times a day while I'm going leading up to the contest, and then I'll leave you alone for 4 months.
Well, I'll pass it on to him and see if it works. Let's talk about the Europa Super Show. That's what we got Big Sean Andros here for, and before he falls asleep on us. Obviously, Ed and Betty Parisa were the promoters this past weekend. As I mentioned earlier, the show went off without a hitch. It was phenomenal. I love the fact that they hold the pro show finals on Saturday afternoon at 2:30, because at 6 o'clock we were done. And just the NPC show was going on, and it just gave us time to do video interviews and actually go eat a normal dinner, which we did for the first time in a while. The Best Poser Awards were won by Marcus Haley and Tricky Jackson. They actually tied, John. They had a pose-off on stage. I actually get some footage of that. I may put it up a little later. And they called it a draw. Now, I want to ask Big Sean, because he has some very definite opinions. Who did you think deserved to win the Best Poser?
I think Tricky deserved it. Tricky's... he does a little pop and lock thing, but he hits a lot of actual poses in the middle. He doesn't just dance. Marcus kind of has this one little worm move that he does, and he just keeps doing it over and over, and he never really hits any bodybuilding poses.
I actually like Marcus's the way he poses, but I think if he formalized a little bit more of his poses, because he kind of is like in a very awkward position when he's moving around on stage. So if you actually look at the pictures of his guest posing, it looks kind of like disjointed. But he's fun to watch. I think the two of them should get together and put a routine to help each other out.
And Tricky posed to Planet Rock, so you can't knock that either.
From what I heard, Ed Parizo should have won the award.
Yeah, that's true. He came out and he does, his Michael Jackson dancing on stage. But he had the suit on, so he really didn't let it loose like he normally does.
Too bad. Yeah, I thought that was weird. Did they award it to both of them? Is that what they did?
Yeah, they gave them both the best poses.
Did they have to split the money, or did they each get the same amount?
Knowing that it came from Sean Ray, I would assume they probably did, yeah.
Don't you think that was a setup? I just assumed it was planned that way.
I think to a certain degree it was, but I don't think that they planned it before the show. I think they just, they both thought they were both good. You know what? The only rap against Tricky, and I like, and I love Tricky, and I think he's a great poser. He kind of does the same routine every single time he's out there. Same music, same routine. I'd like to see him. He's a creative guy. I'd like to see him put together. If he put together a new routine, I bet you he'd be winning every guest poser award. Well,
that's because you're uneducated in 90s hip hop.
No, he does the same routine almost every time.
It's different music every time. It's
no,
different
it's
music.
Not. It is not. He does this. I've seen him do it. It's a slight variation, but it's the same routine. He can do better than that, I think. You know, but you know what it is? When you're dieting for a show, the last thing you want to do is put together a posing routine. I know.
You know what I think is the most amazing thing about Tricky Jackson is that when you're watching him pose, and if you're, you know, off to the side a little bit and, you know, at the right angle, he looks exactly like his cousin Dexter Jackson.
Yeah, no, they real resemblance, you're right.
There really is. It's facially, it's uncanny that, you know, you look up there, you glance up there and you go, it's just like Dexter. It's amazing.
Facial expressions, yeah, they definitely do.
Yeah, they do.
And, you know, but Tricky's really brought his physique up. It's amazing. You know, I believe he's over the age of 40, and this guy is has really improved over the last 2 years. I mean, to put muscle on at that age, you know, is impressive. I'm impressed. So,
well, do you know why I think that is, Dave? And I've noticed it across the board on this 202 class, is that I think these guys now that fall into that class have sort of a renewed vigor to compete because they know they have a class that they can compete in.
Right.
You know, and, you know, before, you know, you win a national show, you win your, you know, middleweight or light heavyweight class, and then, you know, you become pro, and then what are you going to do? You're going to stand up there at 190 pounds and compete against guys that are, you know, over six feet and over 250.
Right.
So, you know, now that these guys have this division that they can compete in, I think they're actually treating their bodybuilding pursuit much more seriously, because the last three shows that I've seen that had a 202 class, I was blown away by the quality of that competition.
Oh, it's just, there's been a lot of competition now. Tricky Jackson emerges victorious here in Dallas after placing third last week. He beats Charles Dixon. Now, going into the finals, Sandy Rinaldi announced that there was a one-point decision. I don't know who the 1 point was in favor of. I got to look at the scorecards. I would almost say it was in favor of Charles Dixon, probably, and because I think he did look a little better at the prejudging. I believe Tricky pulled it out in the posing round. His presentation, in my mind, is a lot better than Charles. That's what Charles needs to work on. But Charles Dixon is one thick mother, you know what. And this guy came in with freaking striated glutes like he never had before. I know he was ecstatic. If you saw the interview I have up on the site that I did with him, the guy is just, like, you know, really, really happy that he's going to the Olympia.
I'll bet he is. And, yeah, I love his physique. I love his that thick, striated. He looks really
now,
amazing.
Now, Sean had Tricky right from the beginning. He had picked him. I personally thought that Charles, I liked the muscle, the density on his body, you know, but it was close. Well, what made you think Tricky got it, Sean?
I think maybe partly it had to do with it was his turn. You know, he's been three straight shows. He was on in Jacksonville. He was off last week in Tampa, and this time he just came in. He had the same conditioning, but he was full and crisp. Everything just came together right. And I like the shape a little better. You know, Dixon needs to fill out his quads a little more, and he could still get a little tighter.
I don't think Tricky was off last week, but, you know, like maybe the competition was better.
He was a little flat compared to, you know, doing three shows in a row. I think the middle one hurt him.
I'm still convinced that, John, the different judging panels yield different results, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's, you know, I guess that's, it is the way it is. But you know what, there you can so notice that difference in the judging panel from the call-outs in general. And, you know, sometimes, you know, if you've been at a show last week, and then you're at the show the week later, and it's virtually the same lineup, and then the guys look pretty much the same, and then all of a sudden the call outs are like, what is going on here? And you realize that the judging panel is like totally different.
Yeah, completely different. Now, in third place was probably the most heroic effort of the night. Chris Dim, who was almost dead 2 years ago, he had that aortic dissection where he almost bled to death. The doctors gave him a 10% chance to live. Then after he made it through that 10%, they told him he'd never work out again. much less compete. And 2 years later, he proved everyone wrong. He's up on stage. He's as good as he's ever been. Qualifies for the 202 Olympia. The guy was in impeccable condition. His glutes were striated. I mean, great presentation. He had the typical dim, freaky arms and ripped abs. And you know what? The guy really overcame a lot to get where he was today. And I'm sure there was a lot of doubters out there that wrote him off long, long ago. So he really showed the naysayers, you know, a thing or two about iron will and determination.
Yeah, that had to be the feel good story of the weekend. I thought from the pictures, I thought he looked, you know, as good enough to take the whole class. But
well, his legs are a little lacking, I think, and that's the problem. What do you think, Sean?
He doesn't flow as well. He's got those huge freaky arms. He's got a small waist, but yeah, his legs are lacking, so he comes kind of straight up and down.
If he brings his quads up, he's going to be a dangerous competitor because he's got a good look. You know what I mean? He's got freaky proportion.
I'd like to do a dissection on those triceps.
Well, you know, like
triceps.
I just said. Now that we have this 202 class really gaining popularity rapidly, I bet you see a lot of these guys that you say this exact thing about, well, if he just brought his quads up, or if he just did this, or if he just did that, I think they're going to do it. And typically these littler guys can pack on the mass a lot better than the bigger guys. Right. So I think you're going to see a lot of improvements across the board.
Well, last week in Tampa, John Hodgson was in second. From England, and the other English guy, Lee Powell, was third. This week they were relegated to fourth for Lee Powell, fifth for John Hodgson. But these guys will be going to the Olympia. They're two real nice guys. They always have a great time, and I'm looking forward to seeing them in Las Vegas at the end of September. Let's talk a little bit about the Men's Open, where Dennis James repeats. 2 weeks in a row he wins Tampa. Now he wins the Europa Super Show. It was pretty unanimous, I believe, in the judges' minds. What did you think about Dennis James, Sean?
He won because nobody else showed up. Not impressed at all. He was in condition. He had the best combination of size and shape there, but there's nothing impressive about him. He's not the old Dennis James.
I didn't think his conditioning, you know, for all the extra effort he put into it to try to get harder, I didn't think he looked harder. I got to agree with Sean on that. And I believe he was a little flatter. So I almost liked his package from the week before better because he when he's filled out, his symmetry looks better to me. Having said that, I really liked Bill Wilmore in second. Now, Wilmore wasn't quite jumping out at me at the prejudging, but at the night show, I almost would have had him over Dennis James, you know, and that's a tough decision because Dennis is a lot bigger. I know you like Bill Wilmore, John. What did you think by the pictures?
By pictures, but you know, I don't know. I agree with. It's hard to say. I mean, you know, Dennis James is a great competitor. I agree with you about his condition last week, looking that little bit fuller look. It makes him rounder and more. You know, it makes him flow a little better. Wilmore does have, you know, his drawbacks to his physique, especially in his inner quads and, you know, his legs from the back. But Wilmore has some freaky, freaky body parts. His back is insane. He's brought up a lot of his, you know, lagging body parts, his arms, his shoulders, his chest. From the pictures, I had him over Dennis James. I had him in first place easily.
Yeah, I know. If you look at the pictures and take a good look pose for pose, you'll see that Wilmore has better symmetry. His conditioning was better. And while it may not have been as big as Dennis, he wasn't that much smaller than him. So I'm happy for Bill. He's going back to the Olympia. He redeemed the fourth place at the Tampa show last week. He did look better, and my hat's taken off to him. Let's talk about number three, third place finisher, Joel Stubbs, who's now going to the Olympia. This is a guy who last week was nowhere in sight of the top 10. And he snaps back here with, once again, a different judging panel, and they put him in the top three. Now, in defense of Stubbs, he was definitely a lot harder than he was last week. I mean, the guy was shredded, striated glutes. He's got, as you know, the best back in bodybuilding. He's probably, maybe has the best shoulders and arms in bodybuilding, too, because he's so big. And he's got a small waist. His legs from the front, however, are very, very, very weak. Especially that right quad that looks completely atrophied. Is it wrong, in your opinion, Sean, and I'm going to ask you, John, the same thing, to put a guy that's lacking in a body part, especially such an important body part, into the top five? Is that like a slap in the face to the other guys?
Absolutely. We got the little speech there at the beginning of Tampa from, Chris Dickerson gives a little speech, and he said the three things that you look for are muscularity, symmetry, and condition. And he harped on symmetry. The guy has no proportions. He shouldn't have even been in the top five.
John, what do you think?
I totally agree. I mean, you can't, especially when there's more complete guys further down the line. I mean, I thought Ben White, for example, looked absolutely amazing. He was harder and crisper and better than last week. And how does Joel Stubbs beat him? There's not a weak body part on Ben White. He's got everything in exactly the way it should be, perfect proportion, flows beautifully. And here you got a guy who's a monster, no doubt a monster. And, you know, Ronnie Coleman said this is bodybuilding, but, you know, you got to have the whole thing. How can you have half your body missing and be considered, you know, over somebody who's completely complete? Doesn't make any sense to me at all.
I mean, in Tampa Bay, I just looked it up. I want to get an exact. I want to be accurate. He was 12th place in Tampa. Okay, to jump from 12th to 3rd, okay, is a tremendous leap. And he leapt past guys that beat him pretty handily last week. And that to me is I don't know. You know, it just goes to show you on any given day, you know, with any given judging panel, you're going to get a different result. And Fuad Abiad, who took 4th, found that out the hard way because he was 2nd last week behind Dennis James, and he dropped down to 4th. He wasn't even in it. He really almost was a second thought in the first call out. And I know he wasn't happy. Now, in defense, and let me give you a little analysis of Fuad. Fuad's got a great upper body. His conditioning was among the best on the stage. No doubt about that. He knows this. His legs are still weak. He needs to bring up those inner adductors to balance his upper body because he's not a short guy. People are gonna rail him for his legs now, you know, until he brings those things up. Did he deserve 4th? I don't know. I probably would have had him above Stubbs. Definitely not above Wilmore. What'd you think, Sean?
According to Aaron Singerman, who gave us the astute analysis that Fuad looks like Fuad.
I have to concur.
What does that mean?
Exactly what it sounds like.
We have no idea, but that was his contribution to the play-by-play.
Using Skype probably. So.
Yeah. No, I liked Fuad. Stubbs shouldn't even been in the top five. I would have had Fuad in 3rd behind Wilmore and James.
And in 5th, John, was a newcomer who's won pretty much every European amateur title. From Poland, Robert Piotro. Help me with that, Sean.
Petrakowicz,
right. Okay, I'm having trouble always remembering this. I'm going to have to repeat it like 100 times tonight to get it down. Robert Petrakowicz was in the first call-out, which a lot of people were very, you know, confused about. The guy had much better conditioning than last week. His frontmost muscular crab shot is really, really, really freaky, actually, if you go online and look at those pictures. Conditioning was great. Size is good. Coloring was good. Symmetry is not so good. You know, his waist is a little thick. Actually, when they, you know, at the end of the prejudging, they usually do a last call out of the top five. He wasn't in that call out, and I was surprised that he wound up sneaking into that 5th spot ahead of Ben White. In the end, there, I don't know. You know, I have to look at the scorecards, but I would assume that Petrakowicz had some scores all over the place, and he probably just averaged out a little higher than Ben White. And you know, I guess this guy's got to be thrilled. I mean, while he didn't qualify the Olympia, you know, to be considered a top five contender in only his 2nd pro show is got to be a real. It's got to make him real happy.
Well, let me ask you this: you think there's a conspiracy theory going on? You know, you got Ben Pakulski last week in, 3rd place, mm-hmm. who definitely, you know, is missing a gigantic piece of a body, you know, his entire back. You know, you've got Joel Stubbs missing legs. And these two guys have qualified for the Olympia. I mean...
Not Petrakowicz. No, only the top three qualify.
No, not Petrakowicz. Ben Pakulski from last week.
And Stubbs.
In Tampa. Stubbs and Pakulski both took 3rd place. Both snagged Olympia berths to compete. Now, they're going to be on the Olympia stage missing gigantic body parts. Do you think that's going to make it easier for the judges to judge the Olympia?
Well, you know, I think what they're trying to do, it looks to me, is they're trying to get a more diversified group in the Olympia lineup there. By obviously, you know, if the same guys win the shows each week, then there's no more Olympia spots open for other guys. That could be a motivating factor. I don't know. You know, Ben White was 6th. Ed Nunn was seventh. Now Ed's problem is that he just needs to get bigger because he's tall. But his symmetry and his conditioning were unbelievable. I went to had a problem.
Incredible.
Yeah, I went to had a problem with Ben or Ed Nunn beating Stubbs or Petrakowicz. Tarek El Sotui looked great too at number eight, and I gave him a little bit of insight, and he came up to me in a restaurant last night and he said, "You know what, you're right. You know, when he turns around, he forgets to flex his hamstrings and glutes. So he looks smooth. When he does flex them, though, he's cross-striated everywhere. He really is in good condition. Does his back still need to come up? Yes, it does. But the guy has got all the tools he needed. I just don't think he's showing it right. So this is a guy, Tarek, who needs to work on his presentation. Do you agree, Sean?
Yeah. He said we thought his conditioning was a little bit off. But as you watched him closely, he'd squeeze the hamstring and glute, and he was striated. His hands were ripped. So that's little stuff that you shouldn't be leaving out on a pro stage.
I agree. Now, the interesting thing, John, you know, Ben White was a little upset with six, but, you know, he the fact that he beat Nunn and Tarek really, you know, I guess elevated him a little bit. But even more so, Johnny Jackson finished in 13th. So according to Ben White's foray on the contest, Diaz was victorious in his mind, at least, because he beat Johnny two out of two times. And I know that going into the Olympia liftoff there, he's got to have the momentum, I think, at least in terms of people believing that this guy is for real now, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's definitely, first of all, he definitely should have been higher than sixth. You know, and Ed Nunn also looked incredible, and I like Tarek El Sotui also. It just kind of irks me that you have these guys that are far more complete not placing ahead of guys that are incomplete. It's just an anomaly that I hope these judges, you know, figure out. But going into the Olympia for this liftoff, for Ben White, he's got to be feeling on top of the world, because as a bodybuilder, he's beaten his nemesis. He's also beaten guys that are, you know, considered extremely good, and he's strong as hell. He's going to be eating like a madman right now going into September, and he's going to show up at that Olympia strong as hell with a great attitude, and he might just pull this off.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, Ben said, "I'm going home and I'm starting my training tomorrow." I'm like, "Ben, take 2 days off, please. Just, you know, don't hurt yourself." No. I'm ready to go. He's completely single-mindedly thinking about the liftoff now with Johnny. And I don't know. There's going to be a lot of trash talk, I'm sure, leading up to that show. And I'm looking forward to. I'm almost looking forward to that more than the actual Olympia itself, believe it or not.
I am now too, especially since he's beaten Johnny at two consecutive shows. Yeah, he's got all the bragging rights that he could use, and he's going to, I'm sure, put those to good use.
Now, the question is, does Dennis James, after winning two pro shows, is this a guy that we can see break into the top six at the Mr. Olympia contest, given that insane lineup, of which, when we were talking about last week with Triple H, we forgot to mention Victor Martinez, by the way.
Yeah.
not we didn't do that purposely, obviously. We just left him out. But, you know, can Dennis James break into that top six? I don't know if it's possible.
I don't think so.
What do you think, Sean?
Absolutely not. Barely top 10.
All right. Yeah, I think he's a top 10 guy. I don't think he's a top 6 guy.
Oh, he's a top 10. He's definitely a top 10 guy. But that top 10, if everybody competes, that top 10 is an extremely tight top 10. So you got to be there's nobody going to break into that top 10 that's a little off, that's missing something, that, you know, it's going to be tight. Extremely tight fit. So I'm looking forward to it, because this Olympia is going to be full of a lot of people. That top 10 is going to be spectacular.
Yep. And we'll talk about that as the show gets closer. And now I think we're down to 6 weeks out. So there's going to be a lot of excitement over the next month and a half. Now let's talk about the pro fitness division, where Adela Garcia regains her status as the top girl to beat in the fitness category. You know, she was out for 2 months. She hurt her knee. She tore her ACL. It was reconstructed. At the time, she was a three-time Miss Fitness Olympia champion. Seems like she's back in rare form, and in the form that she left off in, because her conditioning was great, her routine was great, you know, and she's not known for a routine, and she kind of won unanimously in the points round there, and she was crying after the show, because I think she was nervous going into it, and I'm happy to see that she's back on top. What'd you think, Sean?
I, Yeah, it was six shows.
I think most of her win was just based on her name and her former Olympia titles. I actually preferred Miriam Capes. You know, Adela beat her in the physique round. There's no question of that, but Miriam's routine blew it away, and I think the total package should have put Miriam on top.
I'm going to disagree because I think that Adela's physique is that much better than Miriam's, and I like Miriam a lot. And like I said, I don't think I've seen a routine better than Miriam's in a while. I really liked it. It was original. She was flipping a baton around on stage. I actually got some footage I'll put up at some point in the next couple of days. And I just think that the physique round, you know, while it's supposed to be 50-50, I really think the physique round in the judges' minds kind of sways those situations where it's close. And being a former Ms. Fitness Olympia champion doesn't hurt either. That always is playing in people's minds. Wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Adela also has quite a bit of polish, you know, for her routine and for her presentation and just everything. I mean, you can't really fault her for anything. You know, I think her title did precede her. I think she was definitely, you know, looked at more because of that. But, you know, as far as these contests go, they're so hard to judge. And when you get girls that are close like that, I happen to think that name recognition plays a role. So,
All right. You know. Well, congratulations to Adela. In the pro figure division, we have another former two-time Ms. Figure Olympia champion regain her status as the top girl to beat as well. Jenny Lynn, coming off a third place finish 2 weeks ago, who I know she wasn't very happy with that. She was a little out of shape. She tightens up her package. She brings in a better physique, and she emerges victorious over our very good friend and RX Muscle Diva, Chrissy Chin, who finishes in second, finally qualifying her for her first Olympia. I think I insulted Jenny Lynn, John. I got to tell you, I interviewed her after the show. I haven't put it up yet. I will, though. And I told her honestly. I said, you know, I was a little critical of you on the play-by-play because I still believe that you're not as tight as you can be from behind in the lower body. But she agreed with me. She said, you know what? I'm not. And I'm not where I need to be. I still got 6 weeks to the Olympia. You know, this is, you know, I'm tuning it in or bringing it in slowly. I think she's mad at me. I think she got mad at me because I don't think Colette had asked her if she wanted to do the Muscle Girls Inc. radio show. And I think she turned it down. So I love Jenny. And you know, I really think that she's a great talent. Obviously, she's won the Miss Figure Olympia twice. But you know what? We call it like we see it. And I think she can be better, and hopefully she'll use whatever comments and critical constructive criticism I gave her to make herself better for the time of the Olympia. What do you think, Sean?
I mean, what you said to her was the straight truth, but I still think she was the winner there today. You know, Chrissy looked probably the best she's ever looked, but I don't know. She's so polished on stage. She made the improvements from Jacksonville. She looked like the winner up there, whereas Chrissy didn't have what it take to overcome former Miss Olympia.
Remember, John, just for a second, Sean's infatuated with Jenny Lynn. So.
I used to be. So. I used to be. It's
all, don't take it with a grain of salt whenever he says
it's all over.
When did you stop?
You know, so I think when she lost the Olympia, I'm very superficial.
Now, Chrissy was one of the best packages I've seen. You know, she really looked polished. You know, given those two girls, I wouldn't have had a problem with Chrissy winning that. While her structurally she's not as good as Jenny, conditioning wise she was better. And but I'm happy for Chrissy either way because she did make it up back to the Olympia, as well as third place Marissa De Guzman also goes to the Olympia, and in the pro fitness Nicole Duncan, who finished third, will also be going to the Ms. Fitness Olympia. So we had a very good women's competition. If you think about it, we had two former Ms. Fitness and Ms. Figure Olympias on stage. You know, that would be the equivalent of like having Ronnie Coleman on stage here winning a comeback show, or like a Dorian Yates. So it was exciting, John. You know, a lot of people neglect the women. I almost think the women's competition was better than the men's. What would you agree, Sean?
Absolutely. What wasn't to like?
Plus, we love looking at women, right, John?
I got to say that the most boring part of the show to me was the open men. I loved the 202. The top 10 was real competitive. The fitness routines are fun. The figure gives you like 20 hot chicks walking on stage in bikinis. So the open men was really, it was a weak class. It was boring.
I wasn't bored, John. But having said that, I do enjoy looking at the women. And you know what? I want to just congratulate Ed and Betty Parisa for throwing a great show, giving us the VIP treatment as usual, giving us access to everything we needed, including food and water and anything else, and internet and
you got
electricity.
Food?
I got some food, yeah, and a couple bottles of water out of them. And yeah. Their NPC show had 130 people, and we're still putting up results and pictures for that. So you could always check online and you know, find out what's going on with the NPC show. Actually, Jody May made a comeback in that NPC show, and as well as Sarah Hayes, who we've done an interview with on our site, and they're both going to the North American in a couple weeks. I don't want to spend too much time on the NPC show, but we have all the results up at rxmuscle.com. And we got to take a commercial break. And when we come back, you know what? Let's talk about our sponsors now, because, you know, without them, we really wouldn't even have a show, John. Arthur L. Ray, of course, very, very supportive of us from the very, very beginning. He's going to have a huge booth at the Olympia that I think we're going to be participating with him on. I know Poison is the new supplement of the month for him there. He's really pushing that product a lot, and a lot of people giving him some great feedback on it. You know, we're going to get Arthur on either next week or the week after. I'm just trying to book him. I know a lot of people have been requesting him. Scott Conley and Progenics obviously are on board with us. Very, very supportive. We'll have Conley on a little later tonight. We got some great stuff to talk about with him, man. I have a feeling this may be one of the best Connolly episodes around. And of course, JoJo Energy Drink. Without them, once again, we wouldn't have the ability to do the show and all the great coverage that we do on the entire site. But right now, John, we got to go to commercial break. When we come back, we'll have our first guest.
All right. See you in 2 minutes.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on rxmuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent, legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today. When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product.
If you're a serious athlete, you know you need energy to keep going. Good energy.
I got that JoJo swagger.
JoJo Energy Drink has it, with only 4 calories and no sugar, essential antioxidants, acai berry, and green tea extracts in pure spring water. And with flavor infusion technology, it's always 100% fresh. Oh yeah, with 6 incredible flavors, JoJo Energy Drink tastes awesome. Now you've got a new workout partner. Get good energy. Get JoJo Energy Drink. Available at JoJoEnergy.com.
Have supplement needs? Iron Flex Supplements. The science of sports nutrition has you covered. IronFlexSupplements.com provides top quality products with prices 30 to 60% below retail. We help not only the hardcore athlete, but also anyone trying to get back in shape or who just want to maintain a healthy lifestyle. We have everything from pro hormones to protein to essential vitamins and minerals. Stuck with your current training regimen? Check out our personal training section. Here you can find a program to better fit your needs and goals. IronFlexSupplements.com. The only supplement site you'll ever need. German, American technologies. Compete harder with GAT supplements. Need energy? Gotta lose the fat? Jet Fuel is the answer. Want to build muscle? Use Testogen to ramp up testosterone and start adding the size. How about some muscle exploding pumps and an enhanced training experience? You gotta get your hands on some Jet Fuel. Jet Fuel, GAT's newest nitric oxide training supplement that's guaranteed to work the second you try it. Join the team. Visit German American Technologies website now at TeamGAT.com. That's TeamGAT.com. German American Technologies. Compete harder. TeamGAT.com. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Heavy Muscle Radio.
Hi, this is Lou Ferrigno of Incredible Hulk. You are listening to Heavy Muscle Radio with John Romano and Dave Palumbo. And keep listening, the best show on the air.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRIndustries.com.
All right, our next guest is the 6'4", over 340-pound strongman from Texas. He's also known by the nickname the Texas Stoneman. So without further ado, after a build-up like that, I'd like to welcome Travis Ortmeier to the show.
Man, that was a good build-up, I got to admit.
I work hard on those.
Big build-up for a big dude.
Now, we've had one of your American rivals on the show quite a bit, Derek Poundstone, and all the strongman people listen to our show were in arms about the fact that we have and had you on the show. And to tell you the truth, when I started looking into some of your lifts, and obviously I've seen you on World's Strongest Man and all those things, you know, you kind of got lost in the shadow of this guy, but you do happen to have a lot of lifts that are, or events, I guess, that are a lot better than Derek's. So before we get all to all that information, why don't we just start with the basic questions. How did you get started into strongman to begin with?
You know, strongman kind of came to me by accident. I started out as a bodybuilder, but you know, every time I'd get big, I'd start growing again, stretch the muscles out, and it wouldn't show up. So I started training with a friend named Marshall White, and he's actually going to World's Strongest Man this year. It was always his dream to do strongman. So he started looking around on the internet, found the Texas State Championships, and I said, you know, I'm going to go up there, of course, and support you, do what I can. And night before, I was talking with the promoter and said, what the hell, I'll give it a shot. Ended up taking fifth.
You know, no preparation?
No, well, we had done the tire flip, but that was it. I didn't even know what the other events were. You know, one of the funny things about that, and I'll never forget this, and I won't let him forget this either. Marshall said, man, I'm really glad that you decided to sign up, because at least I know now I'm not going to take last.
Did you beat him?
Okay. So,
oh, man.
Yeah. I whipped him pretty good the next day.
What place did he wind up taking?
He was eighth. He was eighth place, and I was fifth place. And that was eighth out of eight competitors. So, yeah.
Oh, he's last.
Oh, he took
last. I felt bad about that, but, yeah, what the hell.
What are your best gym lifts?
Well, best bench a couple of years ago was around 500, but last year I tore half of my upper pec off, so I haven't benched over like 225 in about a year and 2 months. Best squats around 800. Best deadlift was 870 at Madison Square Garden.
Wow, that's impressive.
What about strongman lifts? What are your best at, and what are those at strongman?
Well, you know, I've got pretty much all the world records in the Atlas Stones right now, you know, hence the nickname. At the Arnold this year, it was the heaviest stone ever, 529 over like a 48-inch bar.
Wow, that's insane. What's that stone that Derek lifted, the impossible lifted, you know, the stone at Fortissimus that supposedly no one can lift?
Yeah, that was a field stone.
Oh, that's not an Atlas stone.
Yeah, it was just like a quarry rock. like a real granite, rock. So, yeah, just a field rock, basically.
So you have the record in the round Atlas stones.
Yeah. Heaviest ever, heaviest set. Couple different ones, two different weights for height. It's a good event for me, but working on the rest, trying to bring them up to par.
Now, does that bar that you have to get it the stone over, does that change along with the weights of the bar, or is that or the weights of the stone, or is that pretty much a set height, you know, 42 or 46 inches, whatever it is?
Well, for the Max stone, that was set basically by the promoters of the Arnold. They just decided 40, it's either 46 or 48 inches, but that would be just a standard height for just a one rep heavy stone. But I've done, I mean, you've seen World's Strongest Man, there's five stones, all different heights. Right. I've done a 465 for reps over a 4.5 foot bar in Serbia a few months ago. So it kind of varies from contest to contest.
So the height of, does the height of the bar factor into the world record? I mean, if you lift a 500, the same weight stone, let's say a 550-pound stone over 42 inches versus 48 inches, is it two different records, or is one over the other? How do they determine that?
You know, that's one of those things you got to love about strongman. There's a lot of gray area in what we do.
We know about gray areas.
Yeah, we know about gray area.
So, I guess, you know, because of the sanctioning body, the Arnold, being as prestigious as it is, you know, if you're 46 or 48 inches, it's pretty much the same bar height, and, you know, a heavier stone's going to win on that. But, you know, if you're loading to 40 or 42, yeah, you can be recognized as loading a heavy-ass stone, but, you know, it's not going to be a record. Nobody's going to recognize it officially.
Gotcha.
Right.
So it has to be a standard height.
Right. So the standard height is 48?
It's either 46 or 48. I can't remember exactly.
Okay.
Now, when did you load this stone that is the supposed world record right now?
That was at the Arnold Classic this past year in March.
Oh, so no one loaded that last stone?
Actually, two other guys did, but I did it the fastest. That's the other factor on the record right there. Excuse me. Time.
Gotcha. So you've loaded the heaviest stone the quickest.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Now let's talk about the rivalry between you and Derek Poundstone. Obviously, you're both from the United States. It's nice to see anyone from the United States, you know, who's good at strongman, because for a while there was no one. Tell us a little bit about that rivalry and where it started originally.
Well, you know, Derek and I were both amateur nationals in 2003, so we go way back. And he took like a year and a half off going to police academy, then came back early 06, and you know, we kind of picked up our rivalry there. At that time, I was pretty much on the top in America, and then Derek rose up pretty quick, and now it's basically been between me and him for the past 2 years. But it's been a lot of fun. You know, he's strong as hell, and we push each other to the absolute limits every contest we go to.
Well, so your best event is the Atlas Stone, then?
I say that one and Truck Pull.
Truck Pull? What's your record in that event?
You know, that's one of those that's even harder to get a record in than the Atlas Stones, because every surface, you got a half a degree difference in the surface, and then, you know, tire pressure, different weights of trucks, all those things. So many factors.
I think the obvious question, John, is how big is the truck that you're pulling?
Yeah, really. Yes, yeah.
Last year we got up to a 50,000 pound coal truck, and then in the finals, I thought to go a little bigger and better. We pulled a Hercules C-130 cargo plane.
What?
I think they listed that as about 90,000 pounds.
Now, I think we got to put some perspective on this, because you would almost think that it's impossible to move this. Now, is the fact that it has wheels, does that make it you know, something that's even in the scope of human possibilities?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, you're not going to drag a 90,000-pound block of concrete, but the one little trick to that airplane was they started it on just a maybe a 1% grade downhill. And so you got a little momentum going, and then basically it leveled out, and you just dragged it as far as you could.
Interesting. That's crazy. How do you get the initial footing to actually pull this thing? I mean, because it's not like you're leaning. It doesn't, body weight at that point is almost irrelevant, because, you know, if you're 300 or 400 pounds, I don't think it's going to help you, right?
You know, height and weight does give a little bit of an advantage. The heavier guys like always have the advantage of just the leverage. Yeah. And, you know, it depends on the traction. Most guys wear rock climbing shoes. You know, that flat rubber sole, you get more surface area on the ground. So
right.
You can actually transfer more of your leg power into the ground. And I was actually watching this show. They had one of the old-time American strongmen pulling a truck, and they were measuring the force output in his legs. And I think, you know, every step he needed to put like 400 or 500 pounds of force, like equal to a partial squat of 400 or 500 pounds, basically. Wow. Every single step of this course. So when you think about a partial rep squat, you know, for 30 or 40 reps, 500 pounds on your back.
That's sick.
It's pretty demanding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the
you
most?
Usually end up throwing up after that event.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is that the most nervous system taxing event?
You know, it's different for different guys. I think the one that gets me the most is a tire flip sled drag. Something about it, man, it just kills me.
Huh.
More of the endurance.
Yeah, really. How many records have you held?
Yeah, that's a good question. I want to say around 10 to 12 total.
And what's your most recent?
Well, let's see. I have, like I said, I got the heavy stone world record. I got the heaviest Atlas Stone Series record, stone for height record. And then earlier this year, I had two overhead records. One was on the dumbbell at the Arnold, and the other was on the Apollon's axle at Mohegan Sun. But, you know, our favorite other American, he was he went behind me and broke both of them right afterward. So, yeah. Hey, I held on to him for a couple minutes. But
that's right. I remember that dumbbell press overhead right on stage in the right at the Arnold Night Show there. It was incredible. You guys were doing
that. That was pretty sick.
What does that thing weigh again? 216 or how much does it weigh?
I want to say it was like 205.5, something like that.
How do you guys get it off the ground so effortlessly? It almost looks like it's like 20
like a
pounds.
Paperclip.
Well, I'm glad you think it looks that way, because it certainly doesn't feel that way.
I mean, because the handle's
it's
200
big. 200 pounds.
Yeah, and the handle's big, too.
Yes. I want to say it's like the size of a Coke can. It's 3 inches across.
Yeah, you guys do it.
That's big.
I mean, because dumbbell rode a 200-pound dumbbell, and that thing felt like I mean, there would have been nothing else I could have done with this thing other than row it with one arm. And you guys snatch it off the floor over your head. I mean, it's almost incredible what you're doing with it.
Well, you know,
competitively,
good and bad with that. You know, I kind of long for the days where strongman wasn't quite at the level where it is now, because I think we're definitely pushing the extremes of the human body.
You think so?
Yeah. At least that's what my body tells me every day I get out of bed.
You feel it? You feel it?
Oh, man, yeah. Oh, yeah.
How old are you now?
I just turned 28 a week ago.
You're 28 and he's already complaining, John. Wait till he gets to our age. Holy shit.
Wait till you double that.
Let me ask you a question that I'm sure a lot of people probably don't even have any understanding of. But, you know, when, like, track and field athletes in the United States go over to Europe, they're, like, celebrated as heroes over there because that's, like, a big, important sport here. And in the United States, probably most people don't even know who these guys are. Now, in strongman, I know, is very popular overseas. When you go over there to compete, are you, like an international, like, hero to these people?
You know, it varies from country to country. England's a lot like us, but they do see a lot more strongmen than we do because they get, you know, all the Grand Prix that are shown on Eurosport. But, yeah, it kind of tends to be the farther east you go, you know, over towards the Eastern Bloc or former Eastern Bloc, the more respected a sport it is. It's actually pretty huge in places like Poland, Ukraine, you know, that
sure.
area.
Hmm. You know, you speaking of that area or sort of around there, you recently won a competition in Norway. What competition was that, and what was that country like, Norway?
Well, that was the second of the World's Strongest Man qualifiers. It was Viking Power Challenge, put on by former World's Strongest Man Sven Carlson.
Oh yeah, I know him.
You know, he's a great guy, and he put on an awesome show. And I've got to say, you know, that is one beautiful country.
Yeah,
it's unreal. I mean, one of those places I would definitely go back at the drop of a hat.
And they were really into strongman there, huh?
You know what? Yeah, it was kind of nice. It was a pretty respected sport over there, and you know, the Eastern Bloc and the Scandinavian countries have a lot of respect for that just brute strength, just physical power.
Hmm. All the European all the European countries are like that, though.
There's a lot of them. I mean, in America, it's almost like we're overwhelmed with football and baseball and basketball on TV. You know, you turn on SportsCenter, it's all you see.
I think most people in a heartbeat would watch Strongman if it was on Sunday night at 8 p.m. on a major channel. I'm telling you, people would watch it. It's exciting, I think.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Every time I've talked to someone, like, oh, yeah, you know, every time I see that on, I stop. But you never know when it's on. That's the problem.
Right. What were you treated like? Were you treated like, you know, Triple H is treated here? Or is it, what's the kind of, you know, level you're at over there?
Well, it's not quite like you're gonna have paparazzi chasing you or anything. It's nothing like that. But you know, people know who you are, and you walk into a shop and they say your name, and you every now and then you got a person asking for your autograph. It's actually kind of weird, you know. I was walking through the airport in Amsterdam. This was a couple months ago, and this little kid comes up and tugs on my shirt. He says, "Mr. Ortmeier, can I get your autograph?" I'm like, looking around, thinking, you know, where's the camera? Who's playing this joke?
Punking you.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's nice, you know. It's kind of it's nice to know when people respect the hell that you put your body through.
When I went over to Barcelona, John, there were people that, I mean, they really treat you like you're a celebrity. I just think the Europeans are more. They're more into the strength, muscle type thing that really isn't very impressive to them because they're not very big people, I think, in general. In this country, we have so many football players running around that people don't even give a shit about, you know, the whole strength and bodybuilders, you know, type thing.
You guys gotta be like what I was saying. It's overwhelmed with, you know, these big three or four sports that we have that most of Europe doesn't really have. You know, soccer's huge there, but they don't have baseball or football.
Right. Now, have you ever been seriously injured?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you know, I tore my pec last year. Probably should have had it reattached, but I didn't. You know, I had a series of contests coming up, and it's kind of hard to do that without health insurance. So I just kind of let it go. Yeah.
Yeah, you got
not fun.
You're crazy, man, with what you do.
Well, you know, I'm looking into some avenues right now trying to figure something out, but I'm gonna have it sooner rather than later. You know.
Yeah, you got it. That's too
yeah,
risky
you
for you.
Yeah, but other one, I got a back injury at the Arnold in 07. You know, I tweaked my back really bad on the deadlift. It was bad enough I had to pull out until the dumbbell, the last event, the second day, and I was able to, you know, I had to basically sumo squat down to the dumbbell, pull it up to my shoulder without bending my back at all, but once I had it on my shoulder, it was fine.
You did it with the back injury?
Yeah, oh. Yeah. Hurt like hell, but I did get 2 reps.
You guys are crazy, man.
Out of your mind.
No, that wasn't even the worst part. It was 3 weeks later, I went back to training too soon. Doing axle clean and press. You know, for information, the axle's just a 2-inch thick barbell, basically, you know, hard to grip. So anyway, I pulled it to my shoulders. It's about 300 pounds, and I guess I caught it wrong, and I ended up pinching some of the nerves that went down my legs. I think it was both SI joints or one of the vertebrae down there. And yeah, I put that down and hit the floor, and I felt fire go down my legs and around my head.
Oh man, yeah, I felt that before.
Yeah, not fun.
It's like someone poured acid into your veins and just, it's like coursing through your body. That's the feeling.
And there's nothing you can do. You can't lay straight. You can't bend. You're always just hurting.
Yeah, that's terrible. Wow.
Where do you train with that? Where do you train? How does it, what gyms have, you know, axles and stones and tires and all of that crap?
You know, stuff like that you got to accumulate on your own. Right now, and I'm trying to find somewhere else, but right now we're training at a storage unit every Saturday. Where we got the tires, we got the stones, we got farmer's walk, all that stuff. But I mean, it's in a parking lot. I got a metal building on one side, and we used to have a little forest on the other side, but they shred that and put a steakhouse in, so it's concrete now.
It must be so hot in the summer there.
It's, you know, you get out there and you're all right, and after about an hour, you're just roasting, and then you see the thermometer gauge in the cars. It's like 110, 112.
Wow.
Oh, it's just ridiculous.
We should send Jeff, the producer, out there to video it, John.
Yeah, we should. He likes the heat.
Actually, Sean likes the heat, too. Sean's always cold.
You know, I keep threatening to put on a pro show right here in Houston in August and make it an outdoor event.
Ronnie Coleman could do it, probably.
Yeah.
It's hot up there, up in Arlington. Yeah.
So you train in the gym like during the week and you just do once a week Saturday, you do strongman stuff?
Normally, yeah. Right now for World's Strongest Man, it's kind of a different format show. You know, you got two events a day for 4 days, then that's the qualifiers. Then you get 2 days off and then three days and seven events in the finals. So I'm doing a lot more event training, so I'll go out there more often during the week. But yeah, otherwise it's in the gym, which right now happens to be my garage, so I really still don't escape the heat.
Wow.
Wow.
You got to be building up a lot of endurance, though. That's probably good for you, I'm sure.
You know, I think it is and it isn't. You know, you get a point of diminishing returns, so to speak, because you can't push yourself hard enough to build up the endurance that you need.
Right.
So you start cooking your brain, but you know, if we go out in the sun and have a, you know, contest where it's hot, like 2 years ago I was in Dubai and everybody else was dying except me, so
you gotta like set up like, you know, the old, you know, when you're a kid, John, your parents put sprinklers on your front lawn and you ran through the sprinklers because you didn't have a real pool. You gotta have like sprinklers. He's gotta have like sprinklers on him like while he's doing his events, you know.
Those Mr. Tubes.
Yeah. Now, are there any other strongmen that are at your level now that you train with in Texas?
Well, you know, the unit's actually got a great record. We have had Josh Thigpen, who came to Worlds. He was 2005, 2006. He was an old training partner of mine. He's kind of put it on the back burner. He's doing some other stuff now. But my mentor, Jim Glassman, he's a pro. He's training out there. That guy, Marshall White, that I was talking about earlier, he's one of the unit members. He's going to World's Strongest Man. And we got a new guy, just got his pro card, and actually took third at U.S. Nationals a couple weeks ago. You know, that's his first pro show, and he took third, so it was pretty impressive. We got five guys that are pretty top notch.
That's good. That's got to help you with your training, without a doubt.
You know, now that the couple of guys that are the top level are coming out more often, yeah, I think it's really going to start helping.
So, what part of Texas are you in?
Houston. Most humid, most hot, torturous environment in the friggin' planet.
What was that gym we went to in when we went to Dave, when we went to WrestleMania? Remember we stopped there?
Grace Wells, Asylum Gym.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Grace Wells. Yeah.
Yeah. He's up on the north side in Kingwood.
How's that place?
It's all right. You know, it's definitely a hardcore little gym. I go up there every now and then when I get a chance, but it's about a 45-minute drive, so I don't make it every day.
Houston's huge, John. It's like, you know, Texas is like everything spread out everywhere, you know.
I just thought that was for the you know, for strongman. He had a lot of good equipment. He had stones, he had tires, he had these great weights, and a big, huge, giant parking lot.
Yeah, he does. I think they've got a lot of athletic trainers that bring their, you know, like high school and junior high kids in there, training them for sports-specific stuff.
Yeah.
And speaking of Ryan, you know, he's an amateur right now, but he just took second at a pro qualifier, and I'm pretty sure he's due at the end of the next pro qualifier that comes up. He'll be a pro, so he'll be our sixth pro from the unit.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's a strong dude, man. I was hung out with him a little bit. He's a big guy. Tell me about, we heard an interesting story about you. Tell us about this notorious wedding present you got from your wife.
the Mega Stone. Well, you know, I got her a rock to put on her finger, and she got me a rock, but mine's 600 pounds. I got to put it on a platform.
Is it true that I think this is the largest stone in the world, correct?
Yeah, heaviest Atlas stone out there. 600 pounds, actually a couple pounds over that.
Have you lifted it?
I've got it to my knees, just not into my lap yet.
Wow.
So it's coming up. I only get a couple months of the year to train with it. You know, beginning of the season or the end of the season.
What is it, in your living room? Like, is that like something while you're watching TV, you like just try to get it up on your lap and stuff like that?
Oh man, I don't think she'd let me do that much. You know, she did enough just getting me the present. But
where do you keep it?
It's over at the unit. It just kind of sits there for a few months during the summer when it's too hot, tacky doesn't work, and you know, tacky and too much sweat and heat. Stones are just a nightmare.
Oh.
So yeah, I'm gonna wait till probably November. Try to put it up.
Is that something that you wanted? Did you say, like, hey, you know, for my wedding, you know, it's our wedding?
Oh, yeah.
I think you did.
She came up with the idea for a wedding present, but, you know, I was the first person to break the 500-pound Atlas stone barrier. So that was a couple years ago, and I think that's why they ended up putting it in the Arnold in the first place, to kind of beat that record. But so I'm the first one to break 500. Now there's, I think, seven guys that have loaded a 500-plus pound stone.
Right.
So I said, what the hell? I want to be the first to break the 600-pound barrier, too.
What does the 600-pound Atlas stone cost to have made? Just out of curiosity, of course.
Well, with the shipping, which was like $200 freight, it was about $1,000 total.
Wow, that's a nice gift.
Yeah. Yeah, now I just need to load it for her before she goes berserk on me because she's getting sick of waiting.
Now, you think they'll ever put one of those in competition?
600?
Yeah.
No, I thought about that, and I actually had a joke with Terry Todd, the guy who puts on the Arnold Strongman. And he was telling me, you know, how he put the stone in there originally to beat my 520 stone. That's the one I broke the 500-pound barrier with.
Right.
But he puts a 522 in. And then the next year, he raises it to, like, 525. And that's shortly thereafter, that's when I got my 600 stone. And he was telling me, it's like, now don't piss me off and go unload that right away, because you know we're just going to have you ship it up here for the contest.
Hey, as long as they're paying, you'll ship it up there. What is the inscription on this stone? You have an inscription on there, correct?
Yes, König der Steine. So German for King of Stones.
Wow.
Very
it's
cool.
Rightfully named, you know.
I'd have it in my living room, John. I'd put it in my living room.
I too.
Well, you know, I think I'm going to use it as a headstone when I die.
I would imagine that's the only one in existence in the entire world, isn't it?
You know, a few years ago, they had a granite one that was like 608, something like that. Turned out it was a mistake. It was supposed to be a 400-and-something pound stone, but they screwed up and made the diameter too big, and it came out to just over six. But that was, I think it was being transported somewhere, and it fell out of the truck, and they threw it out of the truck while it was going, you know, 60 miles an hour, and it shattered against another rock or something like that.
That must have been cool.
So it's the only one left. Let's put it that way.
Well, now, this year's upcoming World's Strongest Man contest is, from what I hear at least, is being considered one of the best, if not the best, lineup of competitors ever. What are your thoughts heading into this contest, and who would you say, honestly, would be the favorite going in there?
Well, you know, I think you're definitely right. This will be the best lineup in history if everybody's healthy and shows up. You know, I think I mean, last year was the best lineup in history to that point, but this year with the addition of Savickas and hopefully Muramets, guys who didn't get the invite last year, it'll be the show of shows, put it that way. It'll definitely be a true world championship. And, you know, it's hard to pick a favorite. I would I definitely put Savickas up at the top. If Pujanowski comes, he's very hard to beat at that show. Derek's going to be hard to beat, and then I'd put myself in there.
Do you feel confident that given this lineup that you if when you analyze all these people's strengths and weaknesses, do you feel that you could come out emerge victorious in this lineup?
You know, if I do what I know I can do, then yes, absolutely.
That's cool. Yeah. That's got to be it's got to be making you feel pretty good going into that show.
Yeah, you know, it definitely helps to have a little bit of confidence. Know that you're training hard and that, you know, all that blood, sweat, and tears will pay dividends when you need it to.
Well, you'll have to keep us updated. When is the official date of the start of the World's Strongest Man?
The official start is September 28th.
And where is it being held this year?
Malta, a little island just south of Sicily.
All right. Well, we're in at the Olympia, John. He'll be in Malta, and as soon as you find out, and you let us know, and hopefully, if you wind up on top, we'll have you back here.
Man, that's my goal. Then you got it.
All right.
Send pictures.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right.
Good luck, and thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule, and let us know if you ever decide to load that 600-pound stone, make sure you video it and send it over to us.
Oh, yeah, you got it.
Thanks for stopping by, Travis.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RxMuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent, legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today. When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product.
If you're a serious athlete, you know you need energy to keep going. Good energy.
I got that JoJo swagger.
JoJo Energy Drink has it, with only 4 calories and no sugar, essential antioxidants, acai berry, and green tea extracts in pure spring water. And with flavor infusion technology, it's always 100% fresh. Oh yeah, with 6 incredible flavors, JoJo Energy Drink tastes awesome. Now you've got a new workout partner. Get good energy. Get JoJo Energy Drink. Available at JoJoEnergy.com.
Have supplement needs? Iron Flex Supplements, the science of sports nutrition, has you covered. IronFlexSupplements.com provides top quality products with prices 30 to 60% below retail. We help not only the hardcore athlete, but also anyone trying to get back in shape or who just want to maintain a healthy lifestyle. We have everything from pro hormones to protein to essential vitamins and minerals. Stuck with your current training regimen? Check out our personal training section. Here you can find the program to better fit your needs and goals. IronFlexSupplements.com, the only supplement site you'll ever need. German American Technologies. Compete harder with GAT supplements. Need energy? Gotta lose the fat? Jet Fuel is the answer. Want to build muscle? Use Testogen to ramp up testosterone and start adding the size. How about some muscle exploding pumps and an enhanced training experience? You gotta get your hands on some Jet Fuel. Jet Fuel, GAT's newest nitric oxide training supplement that's guaranteed to work the second you try it. Join the team. Visit German American Technologies website now at TeamGAT.com. That's TeamGAT.com. German American Technologies. Compete harder. TeamGAT.com. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Heavy Muscle Radio.
Hey, this is the game, Triple H from the WWE. You're listening to Heavy Muscle Radio with John Romano and Dave Palumbo.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by Progenix. Visit ProgenixSRG.com.
All right, John, our next guest is a very well-known friend to us, and he's been here many times before, and we got him back again. We hadn't had him for a month or two. I'd like to welcome Dr. Scott Connolly back to the show.
Hey, guys.
Scott.
Hey.
Hey, Scott. Now, I got to start off, Scott, because this thing is driving me out of my mind. I know John has something he wants to mention, too. Actually, you know, mention your public service announcement you saw, John, first.
Yeah, Scott, there was a public service announcement on TV for, of all things, high fructose corn syrup, and that it's made from corn, it's good for you, and make sure you buy and feed to your family all the products you can find made in America out of high fructose corn syrup.
And what was that brought to you by ConAgra and various lobbying groups of the, you know, K Street in Washington, D.C.? I mean, that's tantamount to criminal consumer fraud. It really is.
Well,
how could they get away with this crap? I mean,
How can they get away with it? They run the fucking country.
Well, coupled on top of that, Scott, I just read a new study that came out that said soda and juice can be dangerous to your health. Imagine that. And what they were basically saying in the study is that if you sip more than two glasses of a high sugar, I guess from high fructose corn syrup, soda or fruit juice per day, you could be increasing your risk for long-term liver damage. And they're actually equating it to like a non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Is that true?
Yeah, one of the, you know, issues with fructose has always been the association between fructose consumption and, you know, pathologic insulin resistance, particularly of the human liver. And in fact, it what I refer to it as is a fructose-induced diabetes of the liver, where, in essence, because of the, you know, limited capacity to really process fructose metabolically in the human body, it leads to, you know, essentially a very exaggerated state of hepatic insulin resistance, which is characterized principally by a gross overproduction of glucose from the liver, which adds, obviously, to the, you know, problem of, you know, increased insulin to deal with that and so forth. But it also has to do with the fact that a number of the sort of bizarre metabolites that are generated by the intracellular or intrahepatic accumulation of free fatty acids, which is a consequence of the increased liver insulin resistance, that builds up lipid products that are really, on microscopic exam, very clear, like little droplets of fat scattered throughout the you know, the interstitium of the liver cells. And these fatty acid droplets are represent what's called ectopic deposition of lipid or fat. In other words, it's fat being deposited in places that it's not supposed to be deposited.
Shit.
And unfortunately, the degradation of those free fatty acid lipid pools lead to a generation of a host of compounds, the most notable of which are one of that has received a lot of attention is a ceramide-type compound, which is a pro-inflammatory molecule. And so basically, the association of fructose leading to, you know, gross hepatic insulin resistance to intracellular lipid droplets, which is steatosis or, you know, liver, fatty liver,
right,
is a condition that is conducive to a large-scale assault on those ectopic lipid pools by the lymphocyte immune system that generates a huge inflammatory response. And then, of course, those inflammatory molecules, you know, circulate throughout the body and produce tissue damage at distant sites. And it's one of the reasons that, you know, fructose consumption is associated not only with a highly lipogenic or lipid-building state, but also the downstream, you know, catastrophe of abnormal clearing of ectopic lipid pools with the inflammatory response that follows from that. You know, in an advanced situation, that's obviously a cardiometabolic risk factor of some significance because it underwrites kind of all of the changes that occur in distant organs, particularly the cardiovascular system and arteries and so forth, where, you know, these inflammatory molecules accelerate atherosclerotic plaque formation and, you know, all kinds of good stuff.
Is this something that's reversible in the liver, or is this like something that's just you kind of like screwed once this happens?
Well, you know, if it gets to a point where the inflammatory reaction in liver is so severe that there's actual, you know, replacement of liver architecture with fibrotic scar, then, you know, that component of it is relatively fixed. Well, the good news about, you know, a lot of this, you know, fructose-induced nightmare stuff is that it is, to an extent, you know, largely reversible with, you know, essentially eradication of the substance from your diet or, you know, minimizing it to absolute low levels and essentially, you know, skewing away from carbohydrate in general will, in a very short period of time, demonstrate changes in several, you know, objective blood parameters that tend to be associated with high cardiometabolic risk. There was an experiment done by a group in San Francisco where they basically tried to recreate the primary profile of an ancestral diet, you know, in other words, with a gross restriction of carbohydrate and the carbohydrate in the diet being right, basically plant carbohydrate and a sort of tripling of protein intake. Then they basically substituted, you know, dietary fats of the N6 long chain variety with a supplement of omega-3. And they did that for only 4 weeks, and in 4 weeks' time, the subjects had a dramatic reversal of all the usual and customary, you know, suspects for blood markers of severe, you know, chronic degenerative disease of both the cardiac and sort of cancer profile variety. So, you know, the turnaround can be pretty quick and pretty dramatic, but, you know, it requires a real strict, you know, dietary modification to see that.
I mean, that alone should be like a, at least give hope to people who figure, well, I've been doing it for so long, I'm screwed. But no, you're saying there is a reversal and it happens quickly.
Yeah. You know, basically, there's all kinds of, you know, evidence that has accumulated that shows, you know, just even minimalist steps, you know, like step one is, you know, get your carbohydrate down from the 60 plus range of percent of calories. You know, try that as a first step. And, you know, then, you know, after that has kind of been accomplished, scrutinize your carbohydrate to eliminate fructose-containing carbohydrate sources. And then the next step would be essentially, again, whatever carbohydrates left, you know, try and bias that to plant-based carbohydrate as much as possible. Keep, you know, simple kind of, you know, complex carb starches in the middle of the day so you don't have a huge compounded insulin spike at night. and disrupt your, you know, your fatty acid metabolism during your period of sleep. And, you know, essentially replace the missing carbohydrate with really high-quality animal protein. Don't replace it with, you know, saturated fats.
But, you know, even the fact that this is reversible, this enrages me, because on one hand, you've got, you know, these studies that are coming out that are showing the absolute, you know, toxic nature of high fructose corn syrup. And on the other hand, you've got public service announcements on TV funded by the corn lobby that are promoting this is a healthy, good for you, made from corn, great thing to have, make sure you buy plenty of it and feed it to your family. The government just sits there and lets this happen, no warning labels. This is nuts.
I read a book recently called Food Incorporated, which was very revealing. They actually kind of did some very profound investigative work, and one of the things they did was they kind of, you know, went into a typical metropolitan, you know, big supermarket and kind of cataloged every single product that was sold in that store. And they found out that over 90% of all the items in the store could be traced to some component of corn manufacture. And that was related not only to, like, whole items like, you know, sugary beverages and stuff, but processed foods that use, you know, various things like, you know, xanthan gum and stuff like that, all of which are derived from corn. Mm. And the fact of the matter is that is only possible because of the fact that the U.S. government subsidizes corn production to such an egregious extent that food manufacturers can purchase it for a price that is way, way, way below the actual cost of production. So it's not just, you know, your usual subsidy. It's a huge, egregious government underwriting of the entire corn industry. And obviously, you know, there are only so many useful, you know, healthy things you can make from corn, and the rest of them are all spin-offs that are either, you know, not good for you in an overt way or really not helpful from the standpoint of, quote, healthy diet. And, you know, I get the message that, you know, industrial agriculture was a necessary step to, you know, feed large, you know, dislocated populations centering in cities and stuff, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, every damn thing you eat and drink doesn't have to have, you know, fructose in it.
Can't they just use the corn to make gasoline? We need that, obviously.
Well, you know, that's the thing that, you know, basically is not being promoted.
I know. You think that would be the thing we'd do. Oh, my God. Let's switch topics for a minute, Scott. You know, your Progenics specialized, you know, whey isolate that you sell has had a lot of success at specifically targeting and speeding recovery from intense weight training. Now, I was reading about another supposedly purified or specially filtered, you know, triple filtered isolate out there known as purified sweet whey isolate. And according to these people who are, you know, promoting it, they're saying that it supposedly helps treat people with psoriasis or skin irritations due to its ability to inhibit tumor necrosis factor alpha. Now, is this stuff for real, or is there something out there that is as potent as what you're doing, you know, in terms of isolating specific whey isolates?
Yeah, when you kind of, you know, signal me about that, and, you know, to my knowledge, there's just one compound that's actually been, you know, objectively studied and subsequently the results made available in the public, you know, domain in the form of a scientific article, and that's I think it's a whey protein. I'm not exactly sure. It's from a company in Canada that has touted the use of quote-unquote cytokines, growth factors, nucleotides, etc., from whey-based materials that have bioactivity. And they did a study of people with documented, you know, long-standing psoriasis, and they used a rather subjective scale of, you know, various components of their degree of, you know, disability or annoyance by the psoriasis outbreaks as their outcome measure, and showed that there was a, quote, statistically significant increase in the sort of improvement scale that, that they were using. But if you really look at the original citation, the improvement is modest at best, and it was not in any way, you know, curative. These people still had psoriasis outbreaks. It was simply a matter that they felt they had documented that the outbreaks were less severe and less compromising to the individual patients. And most of this company's stuff is related to a pretty generic whey protein formulation and or a colostrum. And the only, you know, thing I know about it is that, you know, I've seen some material that, that published the level of one of the growth factors that, you know, is typically analyzed of the TGF-beta superfamily. And the amounts in their stuff were, to me, you know, not impressive at all. I mean, first milking colostrum has a reasonable amount of growth factors in it, but, you know, for example, the material that I use, which is a growth factor extract, has roughly 200 times the level of growth factors that even, you know, first milking colostrum does. So wow. To me, it's like an apple and orange type situation. I mean, somebody can demonstrate that, you know, they've got an isolate that has, you know, more than your usual and customary growth factors or cytokines as compared to conventional whey commodity products. But unless you get up into the, you know, the ranges that, you know, we use in our recovery techniques, you really don't see much from them in terms of, you know, intact human beings. The doses are too low. And just, you know, a regular, say, for example, a beta-lac-enriched WPI, which is not technically, you know, a big deal at all, will, you know, do things in human beings that are, you know, objectively measurable. Like, for example, if you wanted to look at innate immune responses of, you know, neutrophils and lymphocytes and take, you know, people and give them 60 grams a day of a beta-lac-enriched WPI, you could demonstrate in vitro that they have enhanced responsiveness to that priming. That hasn't translated into clinical medicine from the standpoint of taking someone who's truly immunocompromised and showing that, for example, in a provocative inoculation test where you basically have, you know, somebody get virus shot into their nostrils by an atomizer on a quantitative basis, then measure how many people get clinically infected from that. That kind of trial hasn't been done, to my knowledge.
Do people actually volunteer for those kind of trials?
Yeah, they get paid.
Oh. John, John, you're looking for a few extra bucks.
No, thank you. Scott, would you say that the claims made by the companies purveying, you know, this product, purified sweet whey protein isolate, would you say the claims are just, that the results are just not impressive, or are they just blatantly false?
Well, you know, Dave sent me a copy of a magazine or a catalog or something that described this product for the psoriasis. One of the things that was amusing to me was they quoted a journal article, the Journal of the American Dermatopathology or something like that, as the, quote, authentication, you know, citation for the product. And when I looked up the reference, it was an article about the cost, you know, benefit of, you know, various psoriasis treatment. It had nothing whatsoever to do with this product. I mean, it was completely off topic. And, you know, of course, obviously, these people, you know, basically count on the fact that there aren't many people like me who will actually go up and look up the article. And
right.
By the way, even this product that, you know, is manufactured in Canada that does have, you know, some literature associated with it, the dose of the product that needs to be taken is something like 5 grams twice a day. And this product in the catalog that I reviewed says the dose is 400 milligrams.
Oh, shit.
Oh, God.
So, you know, this is all just, you know, very archetypical of the horse shit that, you know, this industry,
right,
you know, is oppressed.
But, you know, isn't it companies like this that are basically, you know, downplaying the significance of the research you've been doing?
Well, you know, anybody is, you know, welcome to downplay the significance of the research that, that my group does. But, you know, so far, we're the only ones that have produced compounds that actually do something in real human beings. I mean, you know, one of my products will, you know, completely offset the chemotherapy-induced injury to mucous membranes. That's a very significant, you know, accomplishment with a nutritional product. I mean, that's one of the most significant comorbidities of chemotherapy. And, you know, this product, you know, basically completely prevents it.
Now, will we see any of these products on the market? I mean,
what we're doing now is we've got a multi-million-dollar budget to take basically three major applications in medicine and, you know, document them in two different independent trials per, you know, per compound, so that there's a replication of, you know, the effect in two different labs. These are all, you know, hands-off, third-party type things that we're just going to pay for the research. We're not going to have anything to do with it. And, you know, we wouldn't be expending that amount of money if we hadn't already done enough sort of, you know, preclinical type work to be assured that we know what the results are going to be.
Sure. That's huge, Scott. Huge.
Yeah, it is. And, you
pretty
know,
big.
It's going to make a big, you know, impression on the naysayers at the, you know, quote-unquote, institutional level that are constantly, you know, sort of saying that these approaches are worthless and blah blah blah. They're most certainly not.
Now, if at some point you know your group that you're working with over there develops isolate technologies that do significantly and testably show performance increases as far as recovery, strength increases. Will the government, is this, you think this is considered cheating? I mean, at what point is this, you know, considered, you know, okay to use these products? And at what point would the governing bodies of the Olympics and stuff like that say, this is cheating, you can't use this, you know?
I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, largely that's a non-scientific, you know, judgment on the part of all the purposes I consider political body, more or less. I mean, the actives that we have developed have all been submitted, you know, for regulation, and all of them are regulated as grass substances.
Wow.
So that designation can't be withdrawn. You know,
right.
Basically we did the requisite safety work to demonstrate their suitability for that, you know, regulatory status, and now that that's in place, it can't be kind of undone. So these are not, you know, going to be regulated as pharmaceutical substances. Mm-hmm. They're going to be regulated as whey proteins.
Wow, that's exciting. So these are, now these substances going to be, you know, I mean, obviously the recovery is available and a lot of people are using that already. Do you have more planned to be released?
Yeah, we have, you know, we did a lot of preliminary work with the actual growth factor extract, which is a concentrate of, you know, the fraction that we find, you know, so much astonishing biological activity in. And we basically, in the last year, subfractionated that to understand, you know, which of the multi-components that are in it are, you know, really delivering the benefits. And we've kind of figured out that there's a fraction that comprises about 20% of the actual, you know, total aggregate of compounds that has extraordinary potency, and we're in the process of kind of characterizing that from a molecular standpoint, and the next step would be to essentially refine the extraction and recovery methodology to produce that 20% aggregate as a pure substance. And then the next step would be to do the requisite, you know, safety study to get it classified as a grass substance as well.
That's incredible.
And we're trying to use that in directed applications that, you know, have high profile support right now. One of the applications that we're, you know, currently engaged in with the U.S. government is the military application for wound healing. You know, a lot of the, you know, explosive device injuries, the traumatic amputations and stuff are associated with, you know, infection and are very resistant to wound closure and complete tissue healing. So there's a lot of focus from the Department of Defense to accelerate research in that area. And we've teamed up with a company that has a topical ingredient that we feel is a perfect match for our orally administrated, orally administered ingredient. And we're going to try to, move ahead on that this coming year to look at, the effectiveness in a clinical population that has, sort of severe non-healing wounds. And hopefully we'll get a lot of grant support in addition to the money that, we're going to throw into it.
That's incredible. That's exciting stuff coming up.
Well, we did a pilot trial to just, do a down and dirty with fractures. And we discovered that in a group of simple and complex fractures, we could reduce the complete healing time of a fracture by half.
50%?
50%, yeah.
Wow.
In essence, if you break your leg skiing, instead of looking at, being immobilized in a cast for 8 weeks, you're going to get out in a month or less.
Now, what would that do for a bodybuilder who used that type of a product after weight training,
Well, one of the things we're going to look at is what this particular compound can do for muscle growth. We have a suspicion that by virtue of the analytic work we've done so far is that it falls into a class of compounds that have some activity in the embryologic development of muscle, which would apply to a bodybuilder by virtue of the satellite cell component of muscle building.
Sure.
Because, satellite cells are basically a recapitulation of, the tissue generation from the embryo state. And these satellite cells are, for all intents and purposes, stem cells. So we're hoping that one of the effects that this thing will have, we already know that it targets these cells directly because we've measured some gene products that are exclusive to satellite cells, and they go up like tenfold when they're exposed to this stuff.
Jeez.
And this is in cell culture.
Okay? Yeah.
We haven't really done this in intact preparation, but still the cell culture stuff is pretty demonstrative of the power of the compound. And one of the things we're going to look at is its ability to, down-regulate myostatin.
Oh, really? You think that's how it might be working?
Well, we think that's a component of it. That would certainly be the case in the embryologic development, that there would be a coordinated, down-regulation of myostatin with an upregulation of the myogenic regulatory factors that create the differentiation environment and, basically create the opportunity for terminal differentiation to a mature muscle cell and then fusion with, an existing myofiber that's in the vicinity by a direct extension of its membrane.
Wow.
All of those processes are well known in terms of the in utero, development. And so far, everything that we have can measure and tried to replicate in cell culture, mimics the ontogenetic development 100%. Now, whether that's going to happen in an intact person, we don't know. But that's one of the things that we're going to look at.
If it does, man, you guys are going to have some freaking formula on your hands. Wow.
Well, it'll be subject to, the limits of physiologic regulation, but nonetheless, if you could, say, for example, amplify the response to weight training even, 3 to 4-fold, that, that still is a pretty significant effect.
Yeah. Let's talk about the supplement industry at large for a second. Guys who are innovators, like, let's say, Patrick Arnold, do you think they make the supplement industry better or worse?
Well, I think the things that make the industry sort of get body slammed are the things that, sort of venture too far to the, the pharmacologic domain. That's what gets, all of these regulatory bodies up in arms about, controlling, quote unquote supplements that are really disguised as, supplements when they're in fact pharmacologic agents. That's why kind of I try to stick, entirely to things that I can unequivocally show come from natural food sources,
Right.
And, there's more work there than I can do in the rest of my lifetime, so I'm you know, pretty focused on that. I think if I deliver a compound that somebody could take, you know, once a day and heal a fracture in half the time, that's a pretty significant, you know.
I'd say so.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's coming. I mean, I can tell you right now that will be on the market in a year or so.
That's absolutely insane. It's almost like science fiction, Scott.
I know, but the interesting thing is that the lead orthopedic researcher that's, you know, conducting this trial was convinced of its efficacy, because in the interim, when I first contacted him and when we actually got together, he went skiing with his family on Christmas and fell and broke his arm, broke his ulna bone. And an ulnar fracture takes 9 weeks to heal and usually has to be casted. His healed in 4 weeks, and he never had to have a cast.
Talk about meaningful coincidences, Scott.
Well,
holy shit.
That, as you can imagine, prompted a phone call about, like, what the fuck is in this stuff? And you know, basically, you know, he just taken it from there, and he did some other things with measuring very objectively the rate of bone implant growth in an artificial joint. His university is kind of the pioneer of that technique, and they have measuring devices that can actually very discreetly show the progress of the implant into the bone. And when they used this stuff, it, you know, basically doubled it. You know, again, the rate of acceleration of the healing is just phenomenal.
What about an arthritis situation? Do you think this thing would have any merit?
Well, you know, arthritis, to the extent that there is, you know, some capability for regeneration. I mean, one of the things that, you know, we could look at would be to combine the extract with, you know, an explant, you know, of a cartilage surface, for example. One of the problems with cartilage is it's relatively avascular.
Right.
So to try and deliver an effective concentration through the systemic circulation is pretty difficult. But you can impregnate, you know, different materials with these compounds, and we've done that actually in cutaneous wounds and skin, you know, skin wound healing.
Mm-hmm.
And we've shown that the impregnation will reproduce the, you know, the effect topically.
Wow.
But in
I got
skin,
bad shoulders. I need some, Scott. Hurry up.
Well, you know, a lot of arthritis, unfortunately, is due to the body's response to the degenerated tissue in the form of inflammation and stuff. And interestingly enough, you know, the recovery compound that's out already has a very significant anti-inflammatory effect.
Does it really?
Yeah, it does. And I'm not exactly sure why. In stimulated cell cultures using a lipopolysaccharide, you know, generated from E. coli bacteria, which is a typical way to get lymphocytes to go nuts with secreting tumor necrosis factor alpha, this stuff diminishes the production of TNF-alpha more so than does like a drug. The one we compared was Entrocept, which is marketed as Enbrel.
Yes.
You know, Enbrel is the new non-steroid, super anti-inflammatory that if it doesn't cure your arthritis, it'll kill you in the process, and you won't be bothered by it anymore.
This stuff
actually is many-fold more potent in suppressing TNF-alpha than Enbrel is.
I got to get back on some then, because I need it.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that I've had huge numbers of unsolicited comments and emails about, you know, I have bad knee, I have shin splints, I have, you know, epicondylitis, I have this, I have that, and I've been using this stuff and I don't have it anymore. And the orthopedic surgeon actually remarked that one of the things that he was blown away by was that the pain from his fracture was gone completely in 3 days.
That's almost impossible, right?
Yeah. It's nuts.
What's the name of the stuff that you're talking about, that heals bones? Did you give it a name yet?
No, we call it Formula X right now.
Right. Got to give it something a little sexier than that, Scott. Come on.
I know, but you know, we're going to wait until we prove its value and then give it some kind of sexy name.
Cool.
Well, Scott, you really gave us a lot of updates this time, so I got to thank you for stopping by and taking time out. And as soon as you get some more information on this bone healing thing, we got to get you back here, and we want updates, because I know I'm going to get 1,000 emails after people listen to this wanting to know where to get the stuff. So, but you're saying in the meantime, the recovery can definitely do some help, or give some help for as far as people who have inflammation in their joints and have pain. Is that right?
Yeah, the testimonials that I've gotten are really very consistent. And, you know, I had kind of a similar experience myself. I got splashed with some battery acid in an aircraft hangar, and basically had a third-degree burn on the side of my neck and my right shoulder and down my arm that was just, you know, as painful as you could imagine. And I started just overdosing with the stuff. And within 2 days, I was pain-free. And this was a full-thickness burn.
Wow.
You know, which was really impressive.
Well, nothing like experimenting on yourself, right?
Well, you know, my wife had had elbow surgery, and, you know, I had, you know, access to give her the recovery, not the recovery compound, she could get that, but the, you know, the wound healing stuff.
Right.
And so she took that and the recovery together, and she had to go back to the orthopedist a week early to get her non-resorbable suture layer out because it was being overgrown so quickly that, you know, she had to go back a week early to get her stitches
out.
That's
amazing.
And she had no pain either. So the pain thing is real, and it may be related to the TNF-alpha and the inhibition of the pro-inflammatory cascade that compound incites, but I don't really know. I can just tell you that there have been so many spontaneous comments about it that it's most likely a real effect.
That's exciting stuff. And any new website or deals that you got going on right now that people should know about?
No, I'm kind of preparing for the first book out of the gate and developing a site that will, you know, service that.
Okay.
And basically, I'll just keep you guys updated on that.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate you stopping by and updating us.
Okay, you bet.
All right, John. That was another great show. I really think Connolly was at his best today, don't you have to say?
He was really, really good today. I don't know, man. He was animated, and I liked him today.
When the bullshit starts coming out of his mouth, you know, when he starts saying bullshit, that bullshit, you know, then you know he's in a good rant. You know,
when he starts cussing, you know, we've hit a nerve. And I always like him. I just sometimes he's a little more animated than others, and it's he kind of changes. He gets more serious when he knows he's on the air. Yeah. But I like it when we're joking around when we're off the air, and that's how he sounded on the air today. Sure. So it was a great interview.
We caught him in a good mood. And Travis Ortemeier turns out to be a great guest, too. What a character. These strongmen guys, you know, these are like the WWE wrestlers of the whole strength and bodybuilding type of industry. I mean, these guys got the best personality. I'd love to go down there in the 100-degree heat, watch Travis try to lift that 600-pound Atlas stone, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would, too. The thing about these strongmen is that I sense that the public would be much more receptive to these guys if they got more exposure and they knew more about them, because there's a discernible, you know, ability for them to beat one another. I mean, it's in bodybuilding, it's so subjective. It's what the judges think. These guys is pretty cut and dry. You lift the damn thing up. If you lift it up, you win.
Right.
You know? I think when the audience can sort of identify with what's going on and how you determine the winner and how and why the guy wins, and then on top of that, the guy's got a great personality. They're trash talking. They got, you know, they're animated. I think it makes for a great spectacle, and I really think we should, you and I, at RX Muscle, should put more energy into continuing to promote these guys and cover their events.
Yeah, and no, I agree. Once again, I mean, great, great guest. All right, but we're out of time for now. So once again, let's thank our guests, Travis Ortemeier and Dr. Scott Connolly, for stopping by. Until next week, remember, with Heavy Muscle Radio,
the truth hurts.
Heavy Muscle Radio is a presentation of RXMuscle.com, the truth in bodybuilding. Tune in next week at the same time for another round with Dave Palumbo and John Romano, only on Heavy Muscle Radio.